Holly, your music is very political and very personal. I wonder what some of the messages are you would like your music to communicate.
Well, every year I seem to learn something new from somebody else, and I try to integrate that into the music. So it depends on what's going on in the world and in my own life, what ends up coming through the songs. But some examples of that were when I was making film and television in the late 60s. That was my career. I was doing Broadway shows. And the anti-war movement was rising up all around me. And I was against the war. I'd been raised in a family that was a pacifist family, a family that had been very upset by the dropping of the bomb in Hiroshima, had been part of the Ban the Bomb movement, had been interested in the labor movement. So I'd been around this sort of thing. I just had been very focused on my career of going out and trying to create a life for myself as an artist. But it was very hard to integrate all of those things, right? I would go at night to stuff envelopes for Another Mother for Peace at their office, and then in the daytime I was on the set. Well, people at Another Mother for Peace never knew that I sang, and people on the set never knew that I had any politics. So I thought that was just the way it was going to be all my life. But slowly I started meeting people who were integrating their art and their politics and their life and all of those things, getting closer and closer to being one thing. And I liked that. It was much less schizophrenic for me. And so I started writing songs about the war. I joined the FTA show, which stood for Free the Army. It was a thing that Jane Fonda put together to entertain GIs who, from within the military, were opposing the war. It was pretty amazing work that they were doing. They had been drafted, and they maybe didn't have the money to get the college deferments or whatever it was, and so there they were in the military, but they didn't really want to be fighting the war. So this show went out, and we performed for them, and I got a chance to be able to do skits and act and sing and dance and have it also be for something that I cared about. And the song started reflecting that, and so that's the first album that I recorded. It was called Hang in There. These were the songs that I wrote after coming back, traveling through the Pacific, and learning a great deal about what was going on in that part of the world. The anti-nuke movement has affected my songs. The women's movement has affected my songs. I was one of those women who would sit around in restaurants and say, well, women's movement's all right for those women who need it, but I don't need it. You know, I was a strong career woman. I thought that, I bought what the media was describing the women's movement as, you know.
How did that change for you?
Well, you know how the news was always talking about the bra-burning part of the women's movement, which was really, I think from what someone told me, there was once just a demonstration in New York City where there was a bonfire and women brought lots of things that symbolized their restrictions as women. Some of them were bras, some of them were kitchen pans, some of them were baby diapers, some of them were, you know, high heels. And the media picked up on the bra-burning part and made sort of a joke out of it, whereas people burned draft cards as a demonstration against the war, and that was taken more seriously. So I bought into what the media was saying, that it was just a lot of women out there being ridiculous and burning their bras. And it wasn't until much later when I started meeting some of these women and saying, wait a minute, these are some of the most intelligent, aware, sensitive, creative women I have ever met. And they aren't women's libbers the way the media was putting it out, as you were some sort of strange bird. These are women from every culture, every race, every class, every religious belief, who are starting to discover their strength as women. And so that, of course, started moving into my songs. That was the next album. It was called a live album, and there were a lot of songs that I wrote about early feminist discoveries that I was making about myself, as well as women's stories, women who were telling me about their lives, and I was writing songs about it. Like, the song started out fine, Mother and Her Baby Are Traveling Along. Well, I don't have a child, but someone told me that story, and so I wrote a song about it.
People probably think that all your songs are very autobiographical.
Uh-huh, I'm sure they do, in which case they think I must have lots of children, because I've written quite a few songs about kids, but no, I like to hear stories about people's lives and then turn them into songs. That's sort of what I see my role as being. I have a talent as a lyricist, and so I try to find the details in people's lives, the little things, you know. It's the big rhetorical statements are sometimes easier to get the point across, you know. stop the war, of course, is very direct. But if you can find, that's what should be said in a speech. But in a song, what has to be found is the details about those people who started the war, those who are being victimized by the war, those who are trying to stop the war, the long-term effect of war. What are the details about that? Because that's what the listener identifies with. They go, oh, yeah, I felt that way. My best songs zero in on the details. I have some songs that are much more general, and they're good at rallies and things like that, but they're not my best poetry.
I'd like to quote something from your most recent record, which is called Imagine My Surprise. You write, "One surprise was discovering that for many, lesbianism is more than a sexual preference. For me, it opened many doors, emotional, spiritual, cultural, and political." I was wondering if you could share with us what some of those doors were.
Well, one of the things was, as I was growing up, being gay, the only reference I ever heard about gayness, whether a gay man or a lesbian, was as an insult that kids in school used to use against teachers they didn't like, and it had nothing to do with their sexuality at all. You know, we'd call somebody a faggot. We didn't know what it meant, really. You know, it was just like an insult. If that's the way we're brought up, of course, there's all these stereotypes about what gay people are like. I started meeting women who were lesbians, who were women musicians, who were really incredible musicians, and who started challenging my stereotypes of what I thought gay people were like. And so that door was opened. Anytime someone challenges an attitude, which I have learned, which is a false attitude, I feel appreciative about it. I feel like my life has been expanded as a result of their daring to say, you don't understand this part of society. That's happened for me around people of color, around disabled people, around ageism, people who are in their 70s saying, you know, don't think of me as an old person. I am just a reflection of what you are about to become, you know. And so to me, meeting these lesbian musicians and having them be so clear about their lifestyle was very wonderful to me. Now, I think that a lot of people think that when one wants to identify publicly as a lesbian, that they're somehow flaunting their sexuality. And for me, it doesn't feel like that, because what lesbianism has meant to me has more to do with learning to love myself as a woman in a society and in a culture which has put women in a secondary place, so that of course, the way I had been taught about society, men would be more desirable because women were second-class citizens, right? Even in high school, I remember seeking out the friendship of men because they were the ones that got to do all the interesting things. They were the girls went to sewing class and the boys went on field trips. So I think that in its most, in the deepest sense of what lesbianism has meant to me, has more to do with my own self-appreciation. And by virtue of doing that, I've also learned to love other women, and they've become my friends. And oftentimes it has very little to do with sexuality in terms of, you know, going to bed with somebody. It more has to do with an incredible love that I have for them, to be able to love them at their best and also at their worst, because we have sometimes had to behave like clowns and been put in strange situations by virtue of the oppression itself. You know, I mean, the image of gay people and of women in a society has been pretty bad. It's kind of hard to live with sometimes.
Performers, maybe more than anybody else, communicate a lot about themselves from their visual presentation, from like how they wear their hair, what kind of clothes they wear. Mm-hmm. Particularly if you're a singer or a musician, like
carefully watched everything you do.
Everybody's watching you, and what you do with your body is going to communicate whether you consider yourself to be primarily a sexually charged person on stage, or mm-hmm. whether sexuality has nothing to do with the music at all, mm-hmm. and whether you're going to be very, very like visually grand or very low key
subdued.
And nonchalant,
mm-hmm.
subdued. Did your image, your way of presenting yourself on stage and on your album jackets change after you came out?
Yeah, but they had before, and it was funny, whereas before the changes would have been identified with something else, now the changes were identified with lesbianism. I did cut my hair. I had a very short haircut, as you can see on the last album I did, and I used to have very long hair. Some of that had to do, I think, with coming out, or even more with a more development of my understanding of feminism. I wanted to get rid of everything in my life that might possibly be there because I thought it was what a woman was supposed to do. So I cut my fingernails. I stopped wearing lacy clothes and high heels. I took all my makeup off. I cut my hair. I wanted to get down to the raw of who I was, since so many people do stereotype us by our looks. I felt like for myself, I wanted to get down to how I would be in my most undefined state and then build back up from that place. My hair had become a symbol in a lot of ways. On stage, it was very long and lush, and it had sort of a wild lioness type.
Yeah, I should mention that Holly has very, very beautiful red hair, but it's very blondish red.
Mm. It's what some people call strawberry blonde. I don't know how they come up with that name. But anyways, it is a very pretty color. I don't know exactly why I was lucky enough to get it. I had a great-grandfather who had a very red hair, so I was the only child who ended up with it. But it was a very impressive head of hair. It was long. It was down below the middle of my back. And on stage with the lighting, it was just this halo, you know, that was very impressive. And I remember people feeling that about Joan Baez's hair when she had that long, straight black hair. And it was then when she cut it, everybody had such a response, you know. But I felt like all that it stood for, regardless of what it was to different people, that for myself, I wanted to get up in the morning and run my fingers through my hair and have not that weight be there, you know. It was a very lightheaded feeling. And it was, I think if I'd been more courageous, I might even have shaved my head, you know. I felt this desire to get, I don't know, it was a funny thing. I just wanted to let go of a lot of baggage is the only way I can describe it, of all kinds of things that were symbolic. And now, as I'm building back, finding clothes that I like because I like them, not because somebody thinks I should wear them. Wearing my hair the way I want to. Not wearing makeup or wearing makeup when I want to. You know, and it has to do with coming to a place where you can finally trust your own self to decide how you want to look and that you're not doing it for your boyfriend or your father or your employer. You know, that you are being who you want to be. And there are uniforms that every culture in sort of imposes on us all because we're so afraid of being liked or not liked, you know, love too much, criticize too much. It's a funny thing. And I go through those changes. I think, oh, gosh, it's become such a trauma to get up in the morning and try to get dressed. I remember in high school, you know, trying to figure out what to put on because it seemed like such a big deal, you know. It was going to define you. And I want very much to get myself out of that state of mind and start doing what I want to do because I want to. In terms of clothes and looks and things like that, you know, I think there's certain other societal things where we need, even if you don't want to wait and throw your garbage in the garbage can instead of out the window, you shouldn't throw it out the window. I mean, there's some things you need to do even if you don't want to. But in terms of people's looks, I really feel like people should do what they want to do what's comfortable.
One of the questions in amongst women who perform women's music and perform frequently or primarily for women's groups is should audiences be male and female, or mm-hmm. should the women be performing for exclusively female audiences? What's your attitude about that, Holly?
Well, see, I would love to live in a society where everything happened. You know, where we weren't restricted to one kind of thing or another. I feel like women's culture, and separate from that, even lesbian culture, Native American culture, Black culture, Chicano culture, Italian, Irish, working class, disabled people, whatever brings a group of people together because of something they have in common. And it may not be, they may not have everything in common, right? And one might have several different groups they would belong to because they were many of those things. But I would love for those people to get together in different groups and in the peacefulness of that, where you don't feel like you're having to defend some part of your life, to be able to celebrate and develop and creatively cultural reflections of that particular part of one's life. So what that means to me is that I would like to be able to go to concerts that were for lesbians only. I'd like to go to concerts for women only. I'd like to go to concerts that were clearly for people who wanted to come together and celebrate progressive politics or, you know, different things like that. And also would respect other groups wanting to get together where they didn't want white people. I wouldn't go. And I wouldn't feel threatened by it. Now, men and some women who relate to men feel very threatened by these concerts for just women or for lesbians, and they feel it's exclusive and that it's reverse discrimination. Now, to me, the difference between a concert of women getting together to try to find out who are we if we had not been taught how to be, how do we want to be from a woman-identified place, I feel like I need to be with just women to do that. And I would like to see men and women who are opposed to that instead understand the healingness of it, the creativity that's coming out of it, the need for it, the fact that us being more comfortable with ourselves will in the long run benefit society at large. Whereas a group of upper middle class white lawyers, men, who have an athletic club where they don't allow women is discriminatory because at that club they do business around law. And a woman lawyer who doesn't have access to that information has her career substantially limited because she's not allowed into that in club, and it makes it very difficult. Now, that to me is discrimination. Whereas if men got together, for example, they wanted to have a men's consciousness raising group and get together and talk about what were the things that taught us to be macho, that make us oppress women, that make us feel these negative things about women, if they wanted to get together to do that, which I think is a healing and creative meeting, and said it would be better for us not to have women there for that, I would think that was fine. I wouldn't think that was discriminatory at all, you see. So it's hard then when you come up trying to write a law about discrimination, because the law doesn't define the fact that some gatherings of an exclusive nature are creative and healing and positive, and some are very negative and destructive.
Has it been possible for you to keep the different kinds of audiences and the different types of settings that you seek?
Well, I think that women's concerts get a lot of criticism, and that that some men and women have argued with the producers and the artists who've wanted to do that, and it's drained a lot of energy from women, energy that they could have been putting into doing something more constructive. In some cities where the tradition of a women's concert has been going on for a while, the general public has started to be educated about it, and some people resent it and some don't, but they usually don't bother it. But I think there's still a lot of people who, let's say a man who is developing a feminist consciousness, and he feels because he is supportive of women and supportive of lesbian lifestyles that he would like to come to the concert. But he needs to understand that his support is absolutely necessary, and that part of that support is to let us have some time by ourselves, and that we will also do concerts that are for mixed audiences, and then he can come to that and support that, and we'll be welcome there, you know.
What do you think, Holly, some of the main questions are that face women now who perform women's music? Because I think the women's music movement has grown, and it's changed through growth, and probably faces a lot of important questions that it's going to have to resolve.
It's hard. I think economics is the biggest one right now. That's not news to anybody, is it, for any field? Economics, it's a really hard time for people with money, people without money. Recording an album, for example, if you want to make an album that is anywhere near the technical quality of that which is coming out from the industry, you can spend easily between $30,000 and $90,000 on it. Now, women have put out albums for $7,000 and $10,000, and I think they've been amazingly good. They have no money for promotion. They don't buy ads in the major newspapers. Word of mouth is how their records get sold. But there's some albums, like Robin Flower just put out an album where she had women like Nancy Vogel and a variety of really fine musicians working on it. It's got some really good time bluegrass music on it and some nice, Robin's a fine guitar player. Well, the folk world is not going to know this album came out, really. I mean, she's been doing real well within the community that is familiar with her. But because we don't have the kind of money to promote the album, I don't feel we need to jam it down anybody's throat, but we don't even have ways to let everybody know that it exists. And I know there's a lot of people who would like to hear this music. Her record was sent up to the Vancouver Folk Festival, and all of the people up there loved it. And the man who runs the festival played it for a lot of people without telling them it was a woman. He was just sort of doing an experiment. And of course, people assumed that she was a man and loved her playing. And then when they found out she was a woman, they had this traditional response of, oh, a woman did that, you know. But how we let people know about this very fine music is, I think, is one of our biggest problems.
You started a record label. Mm-hmm. And are now co-owner of the record label. And you've produced albums of your own, albums by Sweet Honey and the Rock. Refresh my memory about some of the other groups you've recorded.
Those are the two, yeah. Mainly the record company. It's Redwood Records. It's my own. I started it and I owned it. I did it mainly because I wanted to put those anti-war songs I was telling you about earlier on a record. I didn't plan to have a record company, but I also didn't want to wait at that time, this was in 1973, for, you know, Columbia Records or something like that to get political enough that they would want to put out an anti-war album. I would probably still be sitting there waiting for a record deal. So I decided to do it myself. It was very low budget. We did it for $7,000 in a little basement studio. But the response to it was so exciting that it led me to do more. I was working with the pianist and arranger Jeff Langley at the time, and we did three more albums, or three including that one, the live album, the anti-war album, and then one called You Can Know All I Am, which we did in a studio with some very fine musicians, some of which have become very famous since then. Lee Ritenour played on one of the songs. But and then the fourth album was done with all women. It was called Imagine My Surprise. And I like the business part. I like to run business things.
No, I wasn't
like
sure how you'd feel about that, because it takes away a lot of energy from performing, I'm sure.
Well, that's what I'm finding, and so I think I'm going to go back to not being so involved in it. But I like knowing how things get made. You know, I don't like being the protected artist who's sitting up on a cloud just creating, right? Because it's not like that. I want to be part of the whole process. So now I've sold 2/3 of the business to two other women, and we are a partnership now. And they take care of most of they book my tours, and they take care of all the money problems and distribution and, you know, the whole business thing. And yet I meet with them on a regular basis, and they update me on what's going on, and we make group decisions. Like, they present the facts, and then I have a vote, and we do everything on consensus. But I'm not as day-to-day involved in it as I was before. And that's a relief to me, because it's getting so that I really could use having all my time free to do writing and music. Like, I would love to have the time to do films again and television again. I would love to think about the possibilities of being in a Broadway show again. I mean, I think there's a lot of styles of music and forms of music that I am excited by, and I can't really even get to those if I'm putting time into the business part of it.
Well, I wish you a lot of good luck with whatever you decide to do in the future. Holly, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.